It's probably one of the most famous songs for Halloween because it's got a bunch of dancing zombies in it. Like the zombies in the zombie apocalypse. And as the little ghouls, ghosts, and goblins knock on your door tonight, it may bring to mind a possible zombie apocalypse. It wouldn't be the first time. In fact, the world has probably survived a few of them by now. And to find out more about surviving a zombie apocalypse, I've reached out to Robert Smith, who ends his name with a question mark to differentiate himself from other Robert Smiths. He's a professor of mathematics at the University of Ottawa. I've got him on the phone. Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, not a problem. What is a zombie apocalypse?
Right. So the idea behind a zombie is that the dead come back to life. So they come back to life not as humans, but as kind of undead creatures, kind of halfway between the living and the dead. So they wander around, they're moaning and they're groaning, and they're trying to eat us and, you know, eat our brains and feast on our flesh and so on. So it's kind of like this, you know, invasion of the dead in a sense. But at the same time, it means the collapse of civilization. And so they wreak enormous havoc on society. So the zombie part is the zombies coming back to life. The apocalypse part is basically everything else breaks down. And so instead of just kind of going about our lives and sort of fending off the dead occasionally, they really overwhelm us. So that means that we don't have all the structures that we would normally have in life, and that makes it much more terrifying, I think.
Okay. So where does it come from, this idea of a zombie apocalypse?
Yeah, so the original idea for a zombie came from African and Caribbean belief systems of voodoo. And back in the day, being a zombie meant you did the bidding of a sorcerer. So the sorcerer would say, you know, someone in the village, you're a zombie, so the zombie would just do whatever he said. It wasn't undead or anything, it was just kind of this ritual that happened. And then over time, this idea kind of got into the popular culture, and I think the zombie movies happened pretty early on. There's something like 600 zombie movies, and some of them are very old, and, you know, sort of old black and white, sort of scary zombies and stuff. But the modern idea of the zombie started in 1968, and George Romero made Night of the Living Dead, which was the sort of first modern zombie movie. And that's where he combined the idea of this deathly-like creature with the idea of the undead. And he called it zombie after the sort of, well, I think he probably, you know, hijacked sort of the pop culture idea of zombies. But it was the same idea of sort of, you know, you're this sort of creature that's not really autonomous. And so we now have the modern zombie, which, you know, is this creature who can be created in two ways. So one is that the dead come back to life, so we can, you know, climb out of graves or wake up in morgues or something. But the other way is, of course, you can infect a human. And so, you know, you or I could be going about our business, and then we get bitten by a zombie, and now we join the zombie hordes, and then we try and create more humans. And so this allows the zombie kind of infection, if you will, to spread. And so as a disease expert, I look at, you know, the way infection works for lots of different diseases like HIV and TB and malaria and so on. So I apply this to zombies because it's a very good model for that. And it's kind of a fun way to think about it as well.
Yeah. And there are deadly viruses out there. I mean, most recently we've been talking about Ebola and stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah, Ebola is actually quite interesting when you think about it in a zombie sense, because the dead do infect as well. So, of course, they're not getting up and walking around, but dead bodies are infectious. And so if you have contact with dead bodies, as many people do in a lot of the Ebola-ravaged societies, then you are at risk for infection. And the infection rate is actually quite high for, you know, close contact with the bodies. I mean, both Ebola and zombies are kind of very inefficient disease spreaders. You have to actually physically touch someone to spread the disease. So whereas if you think about a flu or something like that, it's airborne. So that's a much better way to spread a disease. So you have this very weak sort of vector of disease happening, and yet in both cases you have a very, very powerful spread. So it actually, I think, shows how transmissible some of these diseases are, even with an inefficient way of getting around from person to person. So a zombie has to actually come and, you know, touch you and bite you and kind of transmit the virus. Now, of course, when it actually does bite you, the probability of transmission is 100% for the zombies. At least that's sort of what's always assumed. For most diseases, it's not 100%. So, you know, if you touch someone who has Ebola, you don't necessarily get Ebola, although the chances are pretty high for Ebola as well. But for many other diseases, you know, you don't always catch the disease. So it's kind of an extreme idea of kind of what the idea of the disease and its mechanisms actually are. It gets manifested in this idea of the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, and I guess there's a lot of history in the world of diseases that have ended worlds, as far as some people are concerned. I'm thinking there's like the Spanish flu, which you still hear stories from very senior people about, And then in the Middle Ages, I guess the Black Plague was ravaging Europe too.
Yes, absolutely. And both of these things were extremely devastating for societies. And they killed about the same number of people, except the Spanish flu did it in 6 months, and the Black Plague took about 200 years. Now, of course, there were not as many people around back in the day, but the Black Plague kind of spread its way across Europe and you know, absolutely devastated people. And, you know, of course, it was, you know, spread by fleas or rats. And witchcraft, so they were killing cats because they thought cats are familiar, you know, for witches. And, of course, cats would keep the rat population in check, so that they actually made it worse by trying to control it. And Spanish flu had a you know, very devastating effect on society. It was actually started in Kansas in a military trench, or it was in a military base, and then it was people were in the First World War, and so they took it to the Europe, and then it, you know, spread through the trenches and so on. So that was quite a, you know, a devastating one. It actually killed more people than the First World War did, sort of happening at the same time. So, yeah, absolutely, you know, a horrendous kind of, you know, apocalypse-like thing happening, and that was, you know, 100 years ago.
So I guess there could be other viruses these days, seeing as how we depend so much on computers. they run in our lives, basically. So what happens in the event of an apocalypse? How do we survive it?
Right. So one of the great things about zombies is you kind of get to imagine what you would be, you know, doing in an apocalypse. And everybody thinks, oh, I'll survive and I'll, you know, have my bunker and I'll hold myself up in my shopping mall or whatever it is. And the honest truth is, as an individual, we're not very good at survival. Like, you know, I think we sort of think back in the day, you know, when we only had our, you know, sort of tools to hand and our brute strength and so on, and we had to survive. And that, you know, has a lot of sort of cultural nostalgia and, you know, people like to think about that, which I think is part of the appeal of the zombies. But in truth, we're not very good at it. Like, you know, I don't know how to, you know, go and mine metals and, you know, build cars or, you know, like design guns and make bullets and so on. So, you know, finding up a zombie is going to be very difficult after a while. But I have other skills. And so I feel like, well, I could, you know, work on a cure or understand how disease spreads or so on. And other people can do their bits. So, in fact, the secret to these apocalypses is actually society. Like, we are very good at building all our strengths together to make a very interdependent society that's much stronger than any individual. And so I think the idea of the zombie apocalypse kind of plays with this idea to say, well, you know, what if that wasn't there? What would we do? And the honest truth is we wouldn't do very well. But the way in reality, of course, to fight off the disease is to essentially band together. And, you know, we, you know, draw on the military and we draw on, you know, strict quarantines and, you know, make sure people actually behave and so on. It actually goes quite a bit against our sort of current very individualistic society when people say, oh, well, you know, I will or won't get a vaccine based on my own choice. And that's traditionally not been the case. I mean, when they were vaccinating against smallpox, they just forced vaccinated people. They said, you don't have a choice here because it's for the public good. And the idea of public good is not so prevalent anymore. It'll be much more about individual good. But I think in an apocalypse, we have to go back to that idea of public good, that you have to do things because you're told to. You don't get a choice. You do it because it's the right thing to do. And, you know, we sort of all know in the zombie movies when, you know, somebody in the shopping mall and somebody opens a door and that's all the zombies in, and that's always how it, you know, goes badly because people aren't actually enforcing those boundaries.
Okay, so it's work together, stick together, and things will be better.
It's live together or die alone, yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. Happy Halloween.